All right, you. Get ready, because we are diving deep into the heart of the Bitcoin world today. And no, we are not talking about those price predictions. Definitely not talking about those get-rich-quick schemes you always hear about.
Mm-hmm.
You sent us a ton of stuff to cover this time. Articles, videos. I even saw you send us some personal notes on this whole Bitcoin spam situation. It's pretty clear you were looking beyond the headlines.
And honestly, so are we. What I think is so fascinating about this whole thing is that it's not just some random technical glitch.
Right.
This spam is really making everyone think about this fundamental tension that's at the core of Bitcoin, maybe even in all decentralized systems.
Mm-hmm.
How do you balance freedom with actually being able to get stuff done?
Yeah.
Can you actually have a system where anyone can do whatever they want without it just becoming total chaos?
Mm.
And then who gets to decide what chaos even is in the first place?
Those are some really big questions, but let's back up for a sec. For those of us who haven't been glued to our block explorers lately, what exactly is this spam everyone's talking about? Explain it like I'm still trying to figure out if I can actually buy a pizza with Bitcoin.
Okay. Imagine a restaurant, right? Bustling, lots of activity. But instead of hearing glasses clinking and people chatting, the whole place is overrun with. Picture this. A horde of Vikings chanting spam at the top of their lungs.
Okay, now that's an image. But how does that translate to, like, the digital world? The Bitcoin?
Okay, so think of it like this. Those Vikings, those are like these things called ordinals and inscriptions. They're ways to attach data, like JPEGs, for example, to Bitcoin transactions. Now, adding data to the blockchain, that's nothing new.
Right.
You remember that Eternity Wall thing?
Yeah.
That project that let people write messages on the blockchain? Like, literally stuff that could last forever, theoretically.
Yeah, I always thought that was kind of romantic in a, you know, geeky kind of way. But I'm guessing those love letters weren't exactly crashing the system, right?
Exactly. Back then, it was just a novelty. But now, with this explosion of these inscriptions, and they're being fueled by things like BRC20 tokens, it's like those Vikings are clogging up the entire restaurant. Everything's slower. It's more expensive for everyone to get their meals, or in this case, get their Bitcoin transactions confirmed.
Gotcha. Okay, so it's about congestion. Limited space, you know, digital resources.
Right.
But I remember you used the word philosophical earlier.
Mm-hmm.
What's the deeper issue here for Bitcoin?
The deeper issue is this. Is this just Bitcoin going through some growing pains? Is this just what happens when a decentralized system evolves? Or is this something more calculated? Is it like an attack on Bitcoin's original vision? Some people out there, they'll argue that any transaction, as long as it follows the rules, is totally fair game. A valid transaction is a valid transaction, they'll say. But other people, they see it as abuse, plain and simple, exploiting the network for personal gain and ignoring Bitcoin's core purpose, being a truly censorship-resistant form of money.
So which is it? Which side is right?
Well, that's the beauty of a deep dive.
Okay, right? So.
We're not here to just give you a simple answer. We're here to explore all sides. And this whole situation, it really makes us think about a really fundamental question. If we really believe in a decentralized future, how do we deal with situations where individual freedom bumps up against the greater good?
That is a tough one. But before we go full philosophy professor here, you mentioned something about history kind of repeating itself. Haven't we kind of been here before with Bitcoin?
Oh, absolutely. This is not Bitcoin's first rodeo with spam or even just people trying to add stuff to its base layer. Remember colored coins?
Colored coins. Okay, that sounds...
It sounds a little strange now.
Yeah, like trying to send a fax through a telegraph machine?
It was ambitious for the time. The idea was basically to represent things like shares of a company on the Bitcoin blockchain.
Wow.
But it ran into all sorts of problems. Privacy issues, scalability, and most importantly, security. It actually disincentivized good privacy practices. Mm-hmm. If we go back to our restaurant analogy, it's like those Vikings were also forcing everyone to wear name tags announcing their favorite dishes.
Oh, no.
Yeah, easy targets for any nosy chefs out there.
Okay. I never thought Bitcoin needed its own version of Don't Feed the Trolls. But it makes sense.
And that's just one example, right? We've seen people try to encode all sorts of data on the blockchain, even early on-chain games. And every time, it forces us to ask, what is Bitcoin actually for?
Okay, so we've got echoes of the past of a philosophical dilemma.
Yeah.
Let's bring it back to the present. Why should you, the listener at home, care about any of this? Especially if you aren't, you know, coding all day or a a Bitcoin millionaire.
Here's why you should care. This isn't just about Bitcoin. This is about the future of the internet itself. This is about how we design and build open, censorship-resistant systems. What's happening right now with Bitcoin is going to have ripple effects across the entire tech landscape.
So we're all Bitcoiners now, huh? Whether we like it or not.
In a way, yeah. These questions that are being raised, the solutions people are coming up with, even the principles at stake, this is all part of a much bigger conversation about digital freedom, individual sovereignty, even just the role tech plays in our lives.
Okay, I'm officially interested. This is big. But before we go full-blown existential crisis here, let's talk about the players involved in all this. We've got the spammers. We've got, you know, regular people just trying to use Bitcoin. What about the miners? Where do they fit in?
Ah, the miners. This is where things get really interesting. They're stuck in the middle. They've got to balance their own incentives, making money, with the health of the entire Bitcoin network. One expert we studied compares it to a fascinating and honestly slightly alarming scenario.
Hit me with it.
So this expert we were talking about, he says to imagine mining pools becoming like PayPal, but Bitcoin is the currency. You see, most miners, they don't operate alone, right?
Right.
They join these pools to combine their computing power.
Yeah, makes sense.
It's kind of like a mining cooperative so they can get more consistent rewards.
Teamwork makes the dream work, or something like that. But I have a feeling there's a but coming.
Oh, yeah. It's a big one. Because this whole pooling thing, it creates a potential point of centralization. Like, if a few big pools end up controlling most of the network's processing power, what we call hash rate, they basically get to choose which transactions go through. They become the gatekeepers.
Okay, so not so good for decentralization then.
And if that happens, this whole idea of Bitcoin being censorship resistant, it kind of falls apart, right?
Okay, that is a little alarming, I have to say.
Yeah.
So what can't be done? Are we just doomed to repeat history? Like, are we just going to end up with a bunch of new digital overlords?
Not necessarily. There are some really interesting projects out there that are trying to decentralize mining even further. They want to give individual miners more control.
Okay.
One of them is called Ocean.
Ocean. Please tell me they're about to sail in and save the day from all this spam.
Well, it's more like they're throwing a life raft into a pretty turbulent sea, but they're doing some really interesting stuff. For example, they're super transparent about their fees.
Okay.
They're giving miners more direct control over which transactions they process. And get this, they're even refusing to process certain types of transactions.
Hold on. Refusing transactions. That seems kind of counter to the whole spirit of Bitcoin, doesn't it?
That's the debate. They would say that by taking a stand against this specific type of spam, they're actually protecting Bitcoin. They're looking at the big picture, you know, prioritizing what's good for Bitcoin in the long run, even if it means they might make less money right now.
It's like a rebellion within the ranks of Bitcoin mining. I kind of love it.
Yeah.
But let's be real for a second. It's not all about ideology, right?
Right.
Someone's making money off all this spam. So who benefits? And who loses?
Always follow the money, right? Well, on the surface, it looks like the miners are the ones making all the money.
Right.
More transactions, even if it's just a bunch of JPEGs of punk rock frogs, means they get more fees.
Makes sense.
But as we were just talking about, that short-term game could backfire. If all this spam drives away regular people who are just trying to use Bitcoin,
right.
If it becomes too expensive or too difficult to use for its original purpose, then everyone loses.
Yeah. What about the spammers themselves, though? Are they just like, you know, digital rebels just trying to cause chaos?
Some of them might be, but I think a lot of them are playing a different game. Remember we were talking about those BRC20 tokens?
Yeah.
Some people see those as a way to create a whole new financial system built on top of Bitcoin.
Right.
And they're willing to pay a premium to make it happen.
So it's like they're building another marketplace.
Right.
Right in the middle of our already crowded Viking restaurant.
Exactly. And just like those real world marketplaces where you've got, you know, everything from amazingdeals.to, let's just say questionable people.
Right.
This new economy on Bitcoin has the potential for both good and bad, innovation and risk.
I'm starting to see both sides of this. It's like this whole spam thing is holding up a mirror to the entire Bitcoin community.
Yeah.
It's forcing everyone to ask some really tough questions about incentives, about control, and what they really want Bitcoin to be.
You hit the nail on the head. And it's not just theoretical, right?
Right.
One expert we studied, he's been in this space for years.
Yeah.
And he has these two rules that he lives by.
Okay. I'm definitely intrigued. What are his secrets to navigating the crazy world of Bitcoin and spam? Okay, I'm definitely intrigued. What are his secrets to navigating the crazy world of Bitcoin and spam?
Well, he boils it all down to two rules. Don't be stupid and, well, shut the
Well,
F.
that's refreshingly direct, I'll give him that. But I'm guessing there's a little more nuance to it than just, some internet tough talk.
Oh, absolutely. First of all, don't be stupid. He doesn't mean that in like a mean way or anything. It's more of a call to action.
Okay.
Bitcoin can seem really complex, but when you get down to it, it's a system created by people for people. This expert is really urging us to take responsibility,
Okay.
do your research, understand what you're getting into. Remember Eternity Wall,
Yeah.
that whole idea of putting messages on the blockchain permanently, that was cool, but did anybody really think through like what happens if you want to change it? The downsides of permanence, right?
Right. And I'm assuming shut the up doesn't mean we all need to take a vow of silence.
No, not quite. This one is all about filtering out the noise, the hype. Especially in this crypto space, it's so easy to get caught up in every little thing. This rule is about cutting through all of that and focusing on what actually matters. Not every new project is going to change the world. So this rule, it reminds us to be discerning, think critically.
So basically, take a step back, breathe, look at the bigger picture. Kind of like how this whole spam situation is making everyone rethink Bitcoin.
Exactly. And remember that comparison of mining pools becoming like PayPal, but with Bitcoin? That's a pretty stark reminder of what's at stake here. If we're not careful, we could end up right back where we started, with all these centralized systems controlling everything.
Which brings us back to that tension we keep talking about, efficiency versus decentralization. Is it always one or the other?
That is the million-dollar question, isn't it? And this whole spam thing, it exposes a flaw in the idea that the free market will just magically fix everything. Just because something is possible, just because someone's willing to pay for it, it doesn't mean it's good for everybody, for the network as a whole.
So what can we do? As, regular people who use Bitcoin, it kind of feels like we're at the mercy of these coders and miners.
Not at all. And this is where that first rule comes in. Don't be stupid. You have a say in this. You can choose to support the projects and developers that you believe in. You have a voice. Use it. Let people know what you want the future to look like.
So it's all about being informed,
Yeah.
participating, not just blindly trusting the tech, but really understanding it, engaging with it,
Exactly. And that's why I love doing these deep dives. The more we all understand about how this stuff works, the better decisions we can make. And remember, this isn't just about Bitcoin. This is about the future of the internet. This is about building a more open, transparent, equitable digital world for everyone.
And on that note, let's leave our listeners one final thought. We've covered a lot today. Efficiency, decentralization, personal responsibility, the collective good. But when it comes down to it, what does it really mean to own your digital life? Especially in a world where the rules are changing every day.
Now that is a question worth thinking about.
It really is. And as we all go deeper in this world of decentralized technologies, it's a question we're all going to have to figure out together.
I think so too.
It's been an amazing deep dive. Until next time. Keep exploring, keep asking those tough questions, and keep diving deep.